For guys, size matters. But bigger is definitely not better for guys with overdeveloped breasts. The condition is called gynecomastia, and Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can help. Dr. Lista is a world-renowned plastic surgeon who has perfected the procedure that corrects gynecomastia with virtually no scarring. Visit theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca and size up your options for downsizing male breasts. theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca.
He's kind of a big deal, just not quite big enough to get his name in the title of the show. This is the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt and Jeff Blair. On Toronto Sports Radio, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we are back. The NHL gets going tomorrow night. As the Canadiens and Maple Leafs drop the puck at the Air Canada Centre. Game time is 7 o'clock on Sportsnet East Ontario, West Pacific. And right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, we will have our Leafs Nation pregame with Gord Stellick and Todd Hlushko at 6:30 p.m. on Sportsnet.ca/590. Leafs Nation postgame with Stellick and Hlushko will be after the final horn on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and we'll also have the Canucks and Flames game at 10 o'clock on Sportsnet East Ontario, West and Pacific. And just a reminder to listen all week for the Blue Jays postseason play of the day. If you can name the play, you'll have a chance to win Blue Jays postseason tickets for the first time in 22 years. Each day during Dean Blundell and Company and during this show, the Jeff Blair Show, a classic call will air from the 92-93 Blue Jays postseason. Listen for your cue to call during Brady and Walker and be the ninth caller through to name the play to qualify for a pair of postseason tickets. You can get all the details at sportsnet.ca/590. And there you go. Eddie Olchuk of the NHL and NBC is one of our regulars. One of our regular insiders. He will be back with us again this year. We're very pleased to announce that. And Eddie will have the call of the New York Rangers-Chicago Blackhawks game. And Eddie joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Good morning, Eddie.
Good morning, Jeff, Stephen. Hope you guys are doing well. And let's see, wasn't it, what was that commercial with the Terminator there, Tom Hankey? Was it Aquavelva that he was doing those commercials back in the day?
I think that's, I believe you may be right about
you that. You are right, yeah.
Way to go, Terminator.
I do believe it was Aquavelva.
Very good.
I don't know what...
And how about Cubs Blue Jays World Series? Is anybody in for that?
I made the point in the show earlier, Eddie. I mean, I love Chicago. You can't help but love it, but you know what? I don't know if the sports world's ready for Cubs World Series. I mean, I had to live through Boston winning the World Series. Man, I don't know. Cubs winning the World Series.
Hey, you're talking to a lifelong Cubs fan, so I'm pretty excited for, obviously, what has taken place with a very young, inexperienced team. It's been a lot of fun in the city, that's for sure, and look, I mean, sometimes we lose sight of it as, you know, even though as a broadcaster with hockey and what have you, I mean, I'm a fan. I mean, I'm a fan at heart. And when you're entertained, win or lose, and you always want your team to win, but it's been very entertaining baseball here in the Windy City all season long. And I know they're going to have their hands full going to Pittsburgh tomorrow. So it'll be interesting tomorrow with doing that game with the great Doc Emmerich, who is a lifelong Pirates fan.
That's right.
So we will have... I guess, well, just for the record, we'll have one eye on the game tomorrow night, and we'll have the other eye on the TV that's behind us.
I like the full disclosure there, Ed. That's great, because that's good. I appreciate that, and I'll think about that. Listen,
time of year.
And I'll tell you this: the Cubs, even if they don't beat Pittsburgh, the Cubs are going to be postseason regulars for the next decade.
They said that in 1908,
by the way.
They
need another pitcher for sure.
I don't think
there's any doubt about that. And they need probably a little bit of help in the bullpen. But they got a lot of young players, you know, not only with the big club now, and you know, but also down in AAA. And, you know, they talked about a 5-year plan, and they're 1 year ahead. And, you know, they brought all these young guys up, and they've been able to catch fire the last couple of months. I think they won the last 9 in a row on the road. And Jake Arrieta has been absolutely incredible. And the one thing that I appreciate just from watching him all the time is just, I mean, and I think that's what separates, obviously, I mean, the great pitchers from, you know, the guys that just, you know, get by, is that it seems like every pitch, it's almost like Price. Every windup is the same. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, I mean, you can't decipher if it's, you know, an off-speed pitch or a heater or a cutter or whatever it might be. It's just like robotic is probably the best way to put it. It's just, you know, it's like Carey Price in Montreal. I mean, just every save he makes, it just looks like he's, you know, he's well within himself and there's not a lot of effort. We know there is, but they just look at, they make it look seamless, and it's been a lot of fun to watch. And like I said, we'll be doing our job, but we'll be a sneaky peeker tomorrow night at the big TV.
Given that it's the Cubs, what could possibly go wrong, right?
I can't hear you, Steven. You're breaking up.
Well, one team in Chicago that does know a great deal about winning, of course, the Blackhawks, a team you're close to. They will celebrate another banner raising, which is sort of, it's almost become a regular occurrence in that city. Eddie, given everything that has happened with this team in the offseason, with Patrick Kane's situation, and also kind of the, I don't know, I wouldn't say concern about contracts, but just the sort of the annual how do we manage the cap situation that the Blackhawks have to go through. I've got to think that for the Blackhawks more than any other team, actually starting meaningful games is probably going to come as a bit of a relief, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, I think that just as you mentioned, I mean, I think what happens tomorrow night prior to puck drop, Jeff, is that it does put a button on what took place, and it's in the rearview mirror, and enjoy it. And, you know, a lot of these guys have been through it once or twice, or the main core guys, the core guys, I guess they're being called around here now, is that, you know, they've been through it three. This will be the third banner raising. But, you know, there are a lot of guys in there that have not achieved it. I mean, Trevor Daley coming in from Dallas, Ryan Garbutt, Artem Anisimov. You know, when you bring in new guys, you get new energy, and they want to be a part of that the following year. And I think you're right. You talk about all the off-ice distractions over the course of the last, 2 months of the summer with Patrick Kane and dealing with that, and then, bringing him to training camp and just everything that's kind of gone on, putting Brian Bickell on waivers.
And, of course, you lost Brandon Saad and Patrick Sharp.
Right, exactly. I mean, and, you know, you throw in Saad and Oduya and Sharp, and, you know, a lot of changes. They re-signed Michael Roosevelt, who everybody remembers the nasty ankle injury he had in the playoffs last year in the finals. And, you know, the Blackhawks re-signed him, but he's not going to be back for a couple of months. So, I mean, there are a lot of things that have gone on, but I think you got the perfect guy in charge in Joel Quenneville. They've been through a lot, and they're the reigning champs. And I think we've seen it is have a good regular season and give yourself a chance to get into the dance. And if you do that, I think the Blackhawks have proven that. Because let's not forget, last year, the last day of the regular season, let's take everybody back. The last day of the regular season, it was an afternoon game. Minnesota was at St. Louis. If Minnesota plays a full complement of lineup, which they ended up resting, I think, 7 or 8 guys that night, or that afternoon, excuse me, if they win that game, they tie Chicago and force Chicago to go into Colorado later that night and get the third spot in the Central Division. Minnesota did not. Chicago didn't have to win, and the rest is history. We all know what ifs are. If Chicago has to start out in the Western Conference, if Chicago has to beat a wild card team, which that would have been a possibility, you know, who knows what would happen. Yeah, they beat Anaheim in the Western Conference final. I mean, could they beat them in round one? I mean, you know, nobody knows, but that's how close it is. And I think it's important for everybody to recognize that and understand that.
For these kind of, the equivalent, the modern dynasty teams, which is essentially what they are, the Blackhawks, the Kings, actually winning back-to-back seems to be a very difficult thing to do, even if you've got a great organization and a great team. Why do you think that they have to, seems to be that kind of gap, Ed, where they can't get it together again the year after?
No, Steven, you know how tough it is in this league and how close it is. And, I mean, you need some luck, too, right? Like, you really do. Like, I mean, look at how the playoffs started last year for the Blackhawks. I mean, you know, Corey Crawford struggled early. Joel Quenneville, you know, brought in the best long reliever in Chicago sports, and Scott Darling. He did the job. You know, he goes back to Corey Crawford in game two. And then he goes to Scott Darling, and then Darling has a tough time in game six, and Crawford, I mean, you know, you need everybody. You're going to need 25, 26, 27 guys. You might need two goaltenders. And Joel, and I mean, that's the one thing. I think that coaches that have some cachet and have those Stanley Cup rings in their pocket, you know, they're able to do things and make moves a lot easier than other coaches can. They're not going to get his question as quickly because of the resume that they've built up. And for Joel to stay with Scott Darling, you know, people trusted that decision. And all of a sudden he gives up three goals in the first period in game six, and then all of a sudden here comes Corey Crawford. So, you know, I mean, you got to have that leadership, and you got to have people that have been there and done that. But I think, Steven, as we've seen, it is just so difficult, and I believe in the toughest league in all of professional sports, and you need some luck. And one thing, too, is that, and I think Tampa learned that last year, is that, you know, when you got teams on the ropes, or, you know, you can't put yourself in spots where you get down in series. Like, you got to save some energy, you know. You got to, and you got to, and look, at the end of the day, one of the biggest differences in that Stanley Cup final was the inability of Steven Stamkos to score a big goal on the big stage in game six. What, he had a post, a breakaway, a great chance in the first period. I mean, you need your big guys to step up. And if you don't have goaltending, we know you have no chance to win. But, you know, I just think that you need your best players, your big guys, to step up. And when Chicago has won, and it's been three times, you look at who's been on the score sheet in the most crucial and most important part times, whether it was being down in the Anaheim series or in game six of the closing, you know, Stanley Cup final, the names of Taze and Kane always end up on a score sheet, and that's what you need. And, you know, it's going to be a battle, because I think the Western Conference has really improved in probably about six or seven teams in the West.
You know, and one of the things the Blackhawks have always been able to do is because of the salary cap, they've always managed to bring somebody up who contributes. Yeah. And at the end of the year, you look at the Blackhawks stat sheets and you go, man, that guy really made a contribution. I think for a lot of people who follow that team, Teuvo Teravainen might be the guy this year. My understanding is the plan is he's going to start out at center, but a lot of people wouldn't be surprised if he ends up as a first or even a second or even a first line left winger at some point. Is that where you see him going?
I think, Jeff, it looks like he's going to be on the left side to start with Taze and Hossa.
Okay.
That's what it looks like right now, because you have Panera and another young guy that came from the KHL, Anisimov and Kane on that so-called second line. So, you know, I think ideally, and again, this is just trying to break down coach speak and Joel Quenneville, I think he'd like to have Teravainen at center. Let's see how the Anisimov works out on the second line setter in the Western Conference, playing with two really quick guys. I mean, that would be the only concern for me with Anisimov is the speed factor in the Western Conference. So, you know, I think it is fluid. I think it is, you know, it's certainly in pencil for sure with Joel Quenneville. Look, the first 7 minutes of the game against the Rangers tomorrow night, you could see Teravainen on the second line playing center, and, you know, you could have Ryan Garbutt, who has had an extremely good camp as a first-year Blackhawk coming from Dallas in that trade for Patrick Sharp. With Trevor Daley, you could see him up on the left side. So I think Joel is not afraid to move guys in and out. But, you know, Teravainen is that type of guy, Jeff, to what you were alluding to. I mean, he's got high skill level. He can really play in any situation. He just needs reps. He needs, you know, opportunity. And with the moves that have been made, with Sharp out and Saad out, that ice time is going to go to a guy like Teuvo Teravainen, whether he's playing the wing or he's at the center ice position.
Ed, on another note, I want to ask you about the Rafi Torres suspension, which over 41 games. You know, we're pretty close to seeing a guy getting run out of the league for bad behavior, which is extraordinary. Does Rafi Torres have any future after this? Should he have any future after this?
Well, I think he got off awfully easy, Stephen. If you look at, and Jeff, we've talked about this over the years, and you know how passionate I am about body checking and technique. I mean, if you look at where he came from and where his hands were and his stick above his head like a tomahawk, he had one thing on his mind. You talk about premeditation. He had one thing on his mind where he skated about 55 feet. Now, the one thing I will say, and again, I watched it, you know, 25, 30 times, and I thought I saw a letter, the letter A on his jersey, as an alternate captain. I'm not sure who made that decision, but to me, that was one thing that stuck out on watching the video. Now, taking it a step further, I would have whacked him for 81 games in the one game he had to play against Anaheim. I just think that, to me, you knew exactly what he was doing. It was a head-hunting type of play by Rafi Torres. I think, Steven, is that he will have a very, very difficult time. This, I understand the rules. We understand that he missed last year. I don't know if that should count, with the 18 months. I don't believe it should. I think, if a guy misses because of an injury, that should be, I think the last time he played to the next time he played, that's how it should be connected. But he has a track record. I'll say this, and I said this at the time, Jeff, if you remember, when he got suspended on that hit with, I believe it was Jared Stoll in L.A., back in the playoffs, I kind of thought that Stoll did change his level. I didn't think that Torres, I don't think he should have been suspended as long as he was on that hit, because I think Stoll kind of put himself in that spot and changed the level. But in saying that, I seen what he did to against a player in Minnesota. I saw what he did firsthand against Marian Hossa, and this one on Jakob Silverberg to me was absolutely unacceptable. And like I said, I would have whacked him for the year until further hearing. But I think he'll have a very, very difficult time. And at some point here, Jeff and Steven, the people that are suiting him up need to take
exactly
responsibility, whether it's financially or serving some games for having a player representing them and playing like that. It's inexcusable. And again, I go back to the technique. He had one thing on his mind, and I challenge Hockey Canada. I challenge USA Hockey. That is one thing that they have to teach young hockey players now, is that if you want to make a body check, bury your stick below your waist. Can you still hurt somebody? Yeah, for sure. But the intent certainly was there. And when you skate around with your stick in the air like a tomahawk, you have one thing on your mind, and that's unacceptable. And I think he got pretty lucky with only, the 41 games.
Well, that's well said. And you're absolutely right. He was an alternate captain with San Jose. I think we're at the point, and I don't know how you would do this, but I've been a proponent of this. I think you're at the point where when it comes to repeat offender, you've got to start slapping the coach or the organization with some sort of penalty. And I don't know what it is. I mean, I've advocated.
Jeff, I've suggested this. We've talked about it at length. And I think it's something you got to look at is that there's different ways. I think there's different ways to look at this. And I think you have enough people in my conversations with powerful people in our game, from managers to vice presidents to presidents. And when I've talked to people, say, look, what about you have what's the roster now? 23-man roster that you're allowed to carry?
Yep.
Why not? If that guy gets whacked for 41 games, why don't you lose a roster spot?
Yep.
Why doesn't it become 22? Now, if you want to take it a step further, Jeff and Steven, do you really want to get it into where now, you know what? You've lost that spot for the game. You're only allowed to dress 17 skaters and two goaltenders for the game. Now, I'm more to the side of losing a roster spot than I am the actual game spot. But you know what I mean? Like, I think there has to be that hanging over the organization and the coach to say, you know what, you have to be in control of your guys. And if you're not, you're going to pay a price. And like I said, I go back to the 17-2. Is that fair to those other guys? Well, you know what? Life isn't fair. And there's a thing called policing the locker room. And trust me, when you were a guy and you got out of line, there's a pretty good chance that there was somebody in that locker room who's going to say, hey, when you act like a clown, and you embarrass the game and embarrass our team, there's a pretty good chance that I'm the one, or somebody else in this locker room is going to be the one that absorbs your stupidity. Because that's the way that it works. And that's the way I think it always has worked. So for me, I look at the roster spot aspect of it. And Jeff, we talked about it for a couple of years. I don't know where it will go, but I think at some point here, something's got to give. Now, I will ask you guys this. If Jakob Silverberg doesn't get up, what happens?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the number? I don't know what the number is.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, Stephen, it's to me, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant that he gets up. We know what his intention was.
I agree with
people that run the National Hockey League know exactly a hockey play from a hockey play that has gone bad and somebody that has ill intentions. To me, we talk about it a lot. It should not matter because I have a glass jaw and Jeff has a cement jaw and you do the same act to both of us, Stephen. It should not matter.
Absolutely.
So Jacob Silverberg is laying on the ice and he doesn't get up and he is seriously hurt. Look, you don't know what the repercussions are going to be 5 years down the road or six. We don't know. You know, all of a sudden, nobody knows. But to me, that type of play, we know that there was one thing on his mind. It should not matter. And I believe that it does have, and when you watch the videos by the league, and I love how they do that, where there was no apparent injury. To me, that's irrelevant. Because if he doesn't get up, there's no doubt in my mind is that that number is greater. I don't think that should be a part of it.
Eddie, appreciate you doing this as always. Look forward to this. We'll do it again next week.
All right, boys. Cubs Blue Jays. Talk to you soon.
Take care. It's Eddie Olchuk of the NHL and NBC. And he's absolutely right. I mean, the one thing, and I mean, my stance and hits to the head and fighting and hockey and all that is, you know, a little to the left of what most hockey people would be, I guess it would be the way to put it. But I have never understood, Stephen, the connection between the act and whether or not the guy is hurt. A headshot's a headshot. Whether or not the guy gets up right away, there was an intent there.
Well, in theory, you punish the action, not the consequence, right?
Right.
But, in the law, we punish according to the consequence. If you kill somebody, it's different than if you don't kill somebody. You know, you are punished differently. But I don't think the deciding line in something like sports should be to step back and say, how badly is the guy hurt? Yeah. And then we're going to decide. It's, if in this case, again, something was a clear-cut intent to injure. Sometimes it's a fluke, as Ed suggested, that a guy gets hurt in a certain way or doesn't get hurt.
Well, and look, Rafi Torres is a thug, and there's, the fact that he was an alternate captain is just...
He's going to be back playing a game 42.
Well, yeah. But on the other hand, now you know why the San Jose Sharks never win anything. Clearly the Sharks... The Sharks definition of what constitutes character is different than most normal human beings' definition of what constitutes character. Greg Wyshynski will join us. We're going to talk about cocaine in the NHL.
I didn't think there was any.
Oh, yeah. You thought they just drank beer.
Just beer.
It's a Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Well, I know that it's almost time for Baseball Central because Kevin Barker's in studio. And we'll be joined by Steve Sparks, former knuckleballer, Houston Astros analyst, as well as Pete Caldera, who'll join us. Pete covers the Yankees for Star Ledger. And he also is a lounge singer during spring training in Tampa. You didn't know that, did you?
No, I did not know.
He is a tremendous Sinatra fan. He's got a tremendous voice. And he sings at a couple of Italian restaurants in Tampa, spring training for extra money.
Fantastic.
Pretty good. For a ball writer, that's pretty good.
It's most of all the things a baseball writer could moonlight doing, that would be one of the better ones.
Most of the time you only think ball writers do in Tampa is go to the Dollhouse.
I've never been there. Tell me about it.
I've never been there either. And after all the stuff I'm hearing about the NHL these days, I'm probably just going to avoid strip joints. I have no idea how that segue worked. But anyhow, seems to be a lot of concern in the... And I'll give you a little bit of background. But there has been chatter for a while that the NHL... Well,
let me give you a bit of other background. Cocaine use in society is going up. It's kind of been an underreported story, but
yeah, it cycles, right?
And, it cycles, and it's going up, and you know, it's not necessarily as much the drug of the upper class anymore. But I mean, its use has been charted. It's increasing in society, and there's a report that the NHL and the NHL Players Association are aware of this, and that they're sort of trying to come to grips with it, and in fact may strengthen some of the drug testing that the league does, and focus a little more specifically on what are called party drugs. Now, this is kind of interesting because, and we're joined by Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports, or Mr. Puck Daddy, as we always affectionately refer to him. I got to tell you that I think, Greg, most fans just assume, most sports fans, not just hockey fans, but most fans just assume that guys are tested for all this. And the fact of the matter is recreational drugs, some of them are specifically not tested for in the NBA. And I believe in Major League Baseball as well, there are drugs that are specifically not tested for. And these are, of course, bargained by the players' associations. I mean, it's true, isn't it? I think most people, Greg, just assume that everything is tested for now.
Yeah, everybody does assume that, and it's clear from the Rick Westhead article yesterday with Bill Daly that the NHL does test the urine samples they collect just to see what's going on in these players' bodies. Mm-hmm. But it's obvious that they haven't collectively bargained to put cocaine and other recreational drugs under the same umbrella as performance-enhancing substances, where there'd be anything punitive happening from the league if guys get caught using. But yeah, I mean, you know, and it's amazing also that people think that every player gets tested, or they think that testing happens during the playoffs. And you know, all of these things are assumptions made about a testing policy, at least in the National Hockey League, and at least for performance-enhancing drugs, that's been substandard for decades.
Is there anything here that, I think sometimes hockey culture, you know, a big part of how we process hockey in this country especially is the sense that there are things that happen in other places that just don't happen in hockey because they're hockey players. You know, there was a lot of denial about the notion that performance-enhancing drugs, which were everywhere, that they would be used. Not, well, hockey players don't use those. Look, they don't look like bodybuilders. They're not doing it. And I think there's been a little bit of resistance in terms of the use of recreational drugs among hockey players. But is there any reason to be surprised that that particular demographic slice of the population would use recreational drugs the way that slice of the population would use them if they weren't playing hockey?
Of course not, but you're essentially right on that head in the sand thing, and I think it's something that we've all kind of come to grips with during this offseason. I mean, if the line is, so Mr. Commissioner, one of your best players is accused of sexual assault, two players were in DUI accidents, and you have a rampant cocaine problem, which commissioner do you think I'm talking to? I mean, Gary Bettman's name probably isn't going to jump to the forefront of that list before this summer. But, you know, I think that, you know, the veneer of these are good old boys that you know, keep their proverbial noses clean, I think is sort of gone by the wayside. And I don't think anybody should be surprised that young, rich, privileged athletes are going to dabble in this. And, you know, the interesting thing, obviously, isn't that, you know, that someone reported that athletes use coke. I think we've all known that. I mean, Stephen, I've read your books, and Lord knows, back in the 80s, a few teams knew how to get down.
I believe so. Yes.
It's that the league acknowledged it. I mean, that's the real thing for me, is that Bill Daly comes out and says, we know it's on the rise, and we may have to add it to the substances that we test and then suspend for. And I think that's a real interesting leap. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting leap in the sense that the NHL thinks maybe the problem is rampant enough where they have to mention it and just let these guys know that mom and dad are watching. But, it, you know, and this is just the cynic in me, it's also kind of advantageous for the league to assign blame maybe for some of the health issues that retired players have had.
Yes.
Due to the fact that drugs are rampant in locker rooms.
That's an interesting point, Greg.
And what I also find interesting in this is the suggestion that Donald Fehr and the NHL Players Association, I mean, that they've essentially done some work on their own in sort of trying to figure out just what the extent of the issue is.
I would guess more from a public health, it's probably the wrong choice of words, but more from a, I'll use it, from a public health point of view as opposed to a punitive point of view, right? I mean, in other words, okay, if there is a problem here, let's help our members as opposed to let's punish our members, or let's help the NHL punish them. That I find really interesting because I've dealt with Donald Fehr a lot, and it's very much in keeping with what he did in baseball. I mean, Donald Fehr's stance on drug testing in baseball wasn't that he was in favor of performance-enhancing substances. He believed that if you're testing for something, you've got to at least include a corrective element to it, and you've also got to make sure that you don't violate, personal rights.
Right, exactly. And I think that's definitely going to be the PA's approach. I think, they're going to grab the ground with their fingernails and be kicking and screaming into having recreational drugs become part of the punitive process in the National Hockey League. But, I mean, it also kind of speaks to this new awareness of what guys put their bodies through, not only what they put in their bodies, but also what's done to their bodies. And you read all the stuff that Dan Carcillo wrote, for example, mm-hmm. in Steve Monador's death. And his sort of new awareness on what he wants to do post-retirement and helping players when they leave the league. I think there is this moment now in hockey, partially because of the concussion crisis and just partially because this is where society is, where offering as much help as possible and offering as much treatment as possible is probably the way to go versus increasing penalties for a guy who tests positive for cocaine use.
Yeah, see, I just, again, what drives me slightly crazy about this stuff is the kind of arbitrary nature of it. The recreational drug that does the most damage in hockey and in the world is alcohol, and it's not even close, right? It's not even close, but, we tolerate it as a society, and all sports leagues have a pretty strong commercial relationship with the people who produce it, so you're not going to hear about a panic about drinking in hockey or any other sport, but I just wonder if this is going to turn into a kind of a full and convenient, sometimes for owners, moral panic.
Yeah, but part of that, as you know, is the fact that the Medellin cartel doesn't buy advertising on the Dasher board.
Yeah,
so you're never gonna have the same sort of conflict of interest as you have with alcohol. But I would push it one step further and say that the idea that we haven't had substantive conversations about the effects of painkillers on these guys, and that being as rampant as cocaine use, that's a little bit, to me, disingenuous as well. That we get a comment from the league about trying to expand drug testing for coke, but at no point are we ever worried about how these guys are basically self-medicating to the point of no return with painkillers and sometimes amphetamines.
Yeah, see Derek Boogaard.
Yeah,
painkillers exactly. And sleeping pills.
I think we know why. Like we said before, you have to be kind of cynical about this and understand that when a league is facing lawsuits about the malpractice of some of the doctors that they've worked with vis-a-vis giving these guys painkillers and they shouldn't have them, they can't step up to the plate and be like, we have a problem with it. So they kind of pick and choose their spots, and I think that's what makes people sort of frustrated by that.
Greg, we're going to let you run. Good stuff as always, my friend. You be well.
Hey, no problem. Thanks, boys.
It's Greg Wyshynski, Puck Daddy, as he is referred to, co-conspirator along with Jeff Merrick and the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast, and also Yahoo Sports hockey editor. He's got a lot of titles.
He does indeed.
So, the story kind of caught our eye last week. As someone who's covered baseball for a long time, I remember when baseball used to be routinely criticized for being kind of dyed in the wool and staid and, slow to react to changing technologies, et cetera, slow to react to new emerging realities of the business world and all that. Well, things have changed an awful lot. One of the things Bud Selig did, of course, is institute or help set up Major League Baseball Advanced Media, which is a forerunner of sports websites, of league websites. I mean, it's branched out into a number of areas. You can buy Olympic tickets through websites that are operated by MLBAM. The NHL has tapped into MLBAM's expertise to set up its website, to run its website. Baseball has actually become, in a lot of ways, one of the driving a league that really has accepted technology and attempted to try to take technology and make it work to better the game without necessarily destroying the soul of the game, if you want to put it that way. We've seen it with replay. Now we may start seeing essentially wireless dugouts. That's probably a very loose way of describing what we're going to see. But some Major League Baseball teams have started to use iPads in dugouts for, you know, real-time statistical analysis, real-time video. And I said this morning, it always struck me as kind of odd that I'd go into a clubhouse and I'd see a bunch of players. Every player would have a laptop. Every player would be watching video. Guys would go into the back room to break down video. Then you'd go out in the dugout and there's a bunch of papers there. And it just seemed to me that, well, why not just have an iPad or something like that so a hitting coach can show a guy, look, this is what you're doing with your foot. We need you to do this. Chris Marinac, a senior VP of league economics and strategy for Major League Baseball. This is part of his bailiwick, and Chris Marinac joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Chris, thanks so much for doing this. It's fascinating because I've always asked myself why you wouldn't have more advanced technology in the dugout, because everybody's using it all the time, every place else. Talk to us a little bit about where baseball is with this and some of the issues in bringing it in, and I guess especially some of the security issues.
Yeah, well, first, thanks, guys, for having me. And in terms of the iPads that we're using in the dugout, the key point is what you mentioned in your original comments there around replacing the printed binders. I think we've gotten to the point now with tablet technology where people are pretty used to using them as a replacement for books and other printed materials. And so, we felt like the time was right to give clubs the option to replace their printed binders with a tablet that's got all the features that people like in tablets that they use to replace a book. You know, it's portable, it's easy to update and download, new information. It's small, it's lightweight, it's got a lot of, new features and flexibility that, a printed book or binder doesn't have. And so, you talked about Major League Baseball embracing technology, and we've done a lot of that in terms of consumer applications, with our at-bat application, video streaming, and other things like that. And we just felt the time was right to give clubs the option. It's not required, but a lot of clubs have already taken us up on the opportunity, and it's helped them better prepare for games and be more effective on the field.
I'd assume at this point in history there wouldn't be any resistance to that kind of change, would there?
It's not resistance, but it's really preference. There are some coaches that still like to use a binder. They like to write on paper. They like to take notes. You hear a lot of people say, I remember things better when I write it down. And so for those clubs, those coaches, they're still printing the books, and that's what's most effective for those coaches. But other coaches, probably the coaches that are more, newer modern technology and newer generation, they really like the features of the technology and the iPad because it's easier to scroll through and find things. You can search for materials. You can organize things in a way that makes it easy to access information. And so those coaches have really embraced it, and we've seen a lot of good traction there with most of the clubs at this point.
Do you think we'll ever get to the point where we'll see the dugout phone gone away with, and instead of making a phone call down to the bullpen, John Gibbons will just email Dane Johnson and say, get Cecil in?
I don't know if we'll see email, but I think, one of the things that we are, that could be something in the future is like what you see in the NFL where they have, an earpiece in the quarterback's helmet. The wireless technology has improved dramatically over the last 3 to 5 years, and we've done a lot of upgrades in terms of network capabilities in our ballparks to give fans access. And I think what you're going to start seeing over the next 3 to 5 years in all sports is better use of wireless capabilities for communication to speed things up and make the games more exciting improve the experience for fans on television and at the ballpark.
But we're not going to. So somebody's going to be listening and say, but does that mean the third base coach, we're going to come to a point where the third base coach isn't going to be giving signs or a catcher isn't going to be throwing down fingers, that they'll be communicating the way they do in the NFL?
I don't know how far it'll go. Baseball, as much as we are embracing new technology, I think there is still an element of the game where people like to have that human interaction, and they like to see certain things happen on the field. You know, they like to see third base coaches, you know, communicating with the runners. We may get there. Who knows? I don't think that's the top of our priority list. But I think the one thing that's important to point out is that, you know, and I think it's been fairly clear this year. I mean, pace of game is a very important issue to us. We're one of the only sports that doesn't have a clock. It's hard to keep the rhythm of the games going. And so we are looking at using technology as a way to make pace of game and our games more appealing and exciting to fans. And the tablets in the dugout, I think, are, you know, have a minimal impact on pace of game, but I think some coaches and managers will get access to the information they need a little bit faster. They'll make that pinch hitter decision or the relief pitcher decision a little bit quicker, and that might streamline some things that happen in the game. And you know, some of the other stuff that we've talked about with wireless technologies could be added in the future. There's nothing that we're actively considering right now, but, you know, just as speculation, in the next couple of years, I think those technologies are to the point where they're vetted enough that they could be used.
Chris, it was great of you to join us today. Fascinating. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Chris Marinac is Senior VP, League Economics and Strategy, Major League Baseball. Why not just have the catcher and pitcher wired? Have the catcher go fastball.
Well,
instead of going
for
all the signs.
The hitter will hear him. He can't have that. He'd have to say something else. He'd have to say it in code.
That'd be great.
You'd have to still
I would
to
love
say
that. Fastball, you wouldn't have to go through all the signs. Curveball, dummy, curveball. speaking of curveballs, fastballs.
There he is.
Kevin Barker's here. Time for Baseball Central. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Brent.
See you tomorrow.
All right. Kevin Barker joins me. Baseball Central's next.